We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Welcome to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Brown, and occasionally we bring on very special guests with deep expertise to join Chelsea Summers or myself in talking about what's really relevant for accounting firms today. And as we kick off a new year, we're talking about new ideas for firm owners and their clients who are thinking about what's next. It's been a very disruptive year, 2025, and everything seems to be in transition. Succession, private equity, artificial intelligence, basically unlocking the value that you're building in your firm. And so in this show, we've got a special guest with us today, Michael Bannon, and he's somebody that sits right at the intersection of accounting, capital, and ownership. Michael, I'm going to read out a little bio I've got for you, and it saves you introducing yourself, but I've got here that you're managing director with CSG Partners, and you lead ESOPs and the middle market advisory work for privately held companies across the country. Michael brings a unique perspective on how private businesses can structure transactions and plan for long-term success. Michael, does that sound like you?
It sounds more or less correct, at least if you're reading the bio from online.
Well, welcome to the show. It's great to have you. When people ask you, what do you do? What do you tend to reply?
Yeah, I mean, it's complex. So usually what I just say is, look, I help privately owned business owners sell their business and make them employee owned. And so depending on their background, I can splinter off from there if they want to learn more.
It's nicely put. How much is your game changing these days?
It's been a run up for a number of years. As a firm, we've been doing this for 27 years in 2026. It's been the last 3 or 4 years, every year has been a successive record year in terms of private businesses that want to learn more about employee ownership and ESOPs and just advisors learning more about ESOPs and recommending them to clients.
Yeah. Well, let's start with this. 2026 feels like it's going to be a defining year for a lot of firms, private company leaders. We're talking about business owners every week who are trying to navigate what is a very uncertain landscape with so much disruption and change going on. When you're having conversations with these people, what's the general sentiment that you're hearing? Is it cautious? Is it optimistic? Is it bullish? What's the general vibe?
Look, I think, even though there's a lot of dynamism in the marketplace and a lot of changes, a lot of shifting, that's really not that different from what we've seen in the past. And I think business owners and leaders are accustomed to it. And so really what they're trying to do is just gather as much information as they can. And so whether that's inside the box, outside the box, learning new strategies, I don't think it's anything too different other than we're just looking at new challenges or new opportunities as opposed to where they have seen them historically. But I don't want to say there's any sense of fear or anxiety in the marketplace. It's much more, okay, there's new ideas out there. Let's learn about them.
Yeah. Now, you've got a foot in the banking world, haven't you, Michael? Just tell us a little bit about that heritage.
Yeah, so I started in private equity, actually. So in the accounting space, obviously, private equity has been a big name and change to the game in the last couple of years. And it was a good opportunity. Learned a lot about in recapitalizations and ownership structures and strategies for investment in privately held firms. What we do today is basically connect privately owned businesses to the same tools that private equity buyers have. So we're using the same strategies, corporate finance, access to capital markets, tax strategies, but doing so on behalf of the privately owned businesses as opposed to when I was on the buy side, the other side of the transaction.
Mm. Well, in giving us a sense of the landscape, what's changed most in how business owners are approaching liquidity and succession?
I think they're thinking about a lot of different strategies. You know, I think historically, if you just zoom out, they have a couple of different options in their mind. You know, private equities become a default for many, and thinking when they're going to exit, they're going to sell the private equity one day.
Yeah, that's been the biggest game in town for a while, hasn't it? But it's not the only one.
Oh, absolutely. I think it before that, it was much more thinking about, all right, do I have a next generation, whether it's a management team or family member that wants to take over the business once I'm ready to exit? And so if you think about the pros and cons between those two options, on one hand, you have an internal transfer to the next generation, which probably doesn't create a lot of liquidity for the seller, but there's tons of flexibility and you certainly remain independent as a firm. On the private equity side, you're great generating that liquidity, but you're trading off control or independence in exchange in many cases. And so what we're trying to do is bridge those differences with the ESOP by creating that liquidity or some semblance of liquidity on the front end and longer term after tax liquidity than a private equity firm would be able to deliver, while still remaining as an independent firm. And so I think as more accountants learn about the ESOP strategies that we work with them on, as private business owners learn more about it, it's becoming much and much more prevalent option at the table. So it's not just A or B, it's A, B, C, D. Let's create something else.
Yeah. Well, here at Inside Public Accounting, Chelsea Summers and I are seeing in the data that succession remains a very big concern for firms, but fewer than half have any kind of documented transition plan or exit. From your perspective, what's holding people back from taking the next step towards an exit or any kind of liquidity event?
Look, I think any successful accounting firm at some point has many voices at the table. You know, accounting has almost always been built to be more of an employee ownership model where you have, it's not broadly held, but you have partnership at the top.
Partnerships don't always agree though, do they, Michael?
and that's part of the problem, Rob, right? I mean, you might have younger partners that want to do one thing, older partners that want to do another. Many that just say, look, everything's great. Why? Let's kick the can. Let's deal with it later, right? We're making money. We're taking care of our clients. We're growing our client base. We're adding new services. Let's deal with this when it becomes a real issue.
That's a sense of complacency that does ring out in a lot of conversations we hear that accountants being the same for many, many years, hasn't it? Thousands of years. And nobody really wants it to change. Right. And so there are some partners with key critical agendas and vested interests, and change becomes difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just gathering more information about all the options, figuring out what's the right strategy for your firm and for your clients, getting ahead of the ball is where you want to be so you can actually have some agency in that decision versus waiting till last minute and saying, oh, well, I could have done that if I started 10 years ago, but now I'm, you know, we're stuck with option A and B, right?
You're an expert, particularly in the ESOP model. I want to ask you why that works so well. But firstly, let's define terms, because if I asked 100 people what ESOP is, I could get the words right from them. But in defining how that works, it might be difficult. So in your dictionary of life and business, what is ESOP, Michael?
Yeah, so ESOP, I mean, it's an acronym. It stands for Employee Stock Ownership Plan. It's a qualified retirement plan that allows employees to earn stock in the companies they work for. So whether it's an accounting firm, a widget manufacturer, a construction firm, F earns stock that's in a qualified retirement account for them. Now, the way that we really think about it in practice, though, is that it's a tax advantage leverage buyout of your own business. And so as a founder or owner, that's the way that we would recommend thinking about it.
Is it a relatively new thing, Michael, or has it been around a while?
It's been around since 1974. It was created alongside 401ks. There's certainly been iterations of legislation to add increasingly more tax benefits over time, but it's been in place for 50 plus years at this point.
Yeah. Well, you work with a lot of private company owners that balance in control, culture, legacy. What makes the ESOP model so appealing to that group, especially when compared to, say, selling outright or bringing in private equity and yielding to the dollar?
Yeah, I'd say for some, it's purely quantitative. It's a tax efficiency of the strategy. So not having to pay capital gains tax on the sale, creating a tax-free company or corporation over time, that appeals to some. Others are purely driven by legacy and taking care of the staff and employees. So not only selling and making sure the employees keep their jobs and the plants in place, but they also secure some equity for the long term. And so it's both sides of the spectrum. Most of our clients are somewhere in the middle, where they're trying to, they've built something over decades of their lives, the most valuable thing that they own. They've invested more into this than their children in many cases. And they want to make sure that it sustains itself. And so the ESOP model creates a way to hand over equity to the next generation, to employees, to the management team, while securing your legacy over time, getting paid for it and getting some tax advantages as well.
That's such a important distinction you've made there, the emotional side of this, because accountants are very much about the numbers and the figures and the data, and they're the guardians of data, if you like. But there's so much emotion and complexity, particularly if the family are involved. How do you navigate that for them?
Look, I think many accountants already do, right? Yeah. When we get engaged by a business owner, many times we're talking with their accountants day one. And their accountants tell us offline, okay, this is how the family thinks. This is how they've operated. They've been very conservative. They don't like debt. They really love this service line. It loses money every single year, but they love it, right? Those accountants that have deep relationships with their clients are already managing this emotional side of things. I think many of them just don't know that the ESOP option exists to click into place with the emotional side of what their clients want to achieve with an ultimate exit.
Yeah. The accounting audience for this show, Michael, work with businesses like you do, and they're the first ones business owners turn to for help on and advice on things like this. So what's the number one thing you'd want those CPAs to understand about ESOPs and ownership transition as we head into 2026?
Yeah, I'd say, look, there's the number one thing is that it is an option, right?
Right.
That you, and that the accountants, while they're instrumental to the overall ESOP process, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to go into the code of the Internal Revenue Code to figure out all the ESOP sections. You don't need to understand ERISA law. You don't need to understand corporate finance inside and out and capital markets. To recommend to a client an ESOP is something that you should explore. You need to know that there are experts out there like CSG Partners that work with accountants hand in glove to understand what the objectives of the clients are, whether or not can analyze whether or not it's a good fit for that client. And then if it is, we'll work side by side with you in a consultative way to make sure that your client is taken care of. I think that's the number one hurdle that many accountants have. Accountants are extremely smart. They don't want to recommend something until they fully understand the entire strategy and have analyzed it, researched it, crunched the numbers. But unfortunately, you can't know everything, right? And so it's knowing who to trust and who you can turn to when you have questions is critical.
That brings up an important point, Michael. Accountants are the people with the answers. They're the trusted advisor, and they feel like they have to know everything, but the specialist expertise that you and CSG have, why would an accounting firm come to you? What kind of signs would they be having that would warrant a conversation with you?
Yeah, so I think a great example is a privately held business, and you have a founder who's maybe 50, 55, hasn't done a ton of estate planning yet, really has reinvested everything that they own back into the business. And so, if you look on average, privately held businesses have 80% of their net worth in their business. So maybe they have some real estate tied to the business or some liquidity outside. But they should be thinking about, how do we diversify? How do we take care of the family? God forbid something happens. What would happen for the family's net worth that's been built up over the course of decades? Sitting down with that client saying, hey, you should sell 30% to a family office or private equity firm, probably isn't that going to make you very popular. Yeah. But sitting down and saying, look, there's a strategy where you could sell 30%. It's going to go into your employees' hands. Nothing changes operationally. You get tax benefits. Company gets tax benefits. You get liquidity. Your family's taken care of. You have chips off the table. And you've put an exit strategy in place, and you can reevaluate it in 5 years and sell to private equity then if you really wanted to. But at least we're addressing the issue proactively instead of kicking the can. I think that's really what they should be thinking about, especially as you're going into a new year, thinking from a strategic perspective.
Very well put. It seems like ESOPs are the perfect exit vehicle. What could go wrong? What are the downsides?
Yeah, well, I'd say, I think ESOPs are not the right fit if a business owner is trying to maximize total dollars that they receive within a 24-month period.
Right.
After 24 months, the tax savings and the patience with an ESOP starts to pay off. But if it's a short-term exit that we need to take care of now, you know, 72-year-old shareholder that really needs liquidity, sick of it, doesn't want to deal with the business anymore, wants someone to come in, it's the right strategy, or it's not the right strategy. If you don't have a next generation management team, you need someone to come in and take control, private equity firm, strategic buyer, and ESOP can't do that for you, right? And ESOP's built for a chassis that's already there. And so there's multiple situations where it might not be the best fit, but if you have a longer term time horizon or medium time horizon, you have a solid management team, you have a sustainable business model, it's definitely something that should be evaluated. I'm not saying it's going to be the right fit for everyone, but it's certainly an option that needs to be analyzed.
I'm thinking of some of the most stressful events that happen in people's lives, Michael, and perhaps we might have a tough diagnosis medically or a divorce or a bereavement or selling your house, something like that. But selling a business must be right up there in terms of the stress that it can cause. So I'm intrigued. You've done hundreds of transactions. What separates the owners who get great outcomes and manage this well from the ones that struggle with the process?
Yeah, I think it's being open and honest about what your fears are on the front end. You know, when I talk with the business owner and on the front end, he says, yeah, everything's fine. No, any sort of exit. I just want money and all these sorts of things. There's much more behind that. And they haven't really analyzed what their priorities in a transaction are. Mm-hmm. Someone who I sit down with and says, here's, you know, ideally, I want to take care of my employees. I want most money possible for my work and equity that I'm selling. And I want to do some estate planning. Those are easy, right? They've thought through and they know it could have been a laundry list of 10 things, but they've narrowed it down to three. These are three most important to me, right? If you have those priorities, any sort of advisor is going to be able to sit down and create the best possible solution for you. It's not going to be the best solution for everyone, but you have flexibility to create it for you. If you come back and just say, I want the most possible money, then all you can really do is run a competitive process and try to get the biggest dollar. And usually when that dollar hits, there were two or three other priorities that weren't addressed and you're going to turn it down anyways. Mm. So I think being proactive, truly honest with yourself, what do you want to accomplish here? And making sure you have advisors around you that are giving you honest feedback about what those should be is going to lead to the most successful transaction because you can get ahead of it.
It's been well documented, Michael, the aging accounting profession and how so many CPAs are at or close to retirement age. And a lot of firms are now dealing with partner retirements, rising valuations. How does the current macro environment, like interest rates, economics, buy-demand, private equity, involvement, how does all of that affect the time and valuation decisions right now?
Yeah. Look, as far as an ESOP goes, or just generally speaking, for an ESOP. So look, we're working with a number of accounting firms to evaluate ESOPs for the firms themselves, as well as their clients. What private equity has done is reset market expectations of what the valuation of an accounting firm is. It's no longer, a set of golf clubs on retirement and some receivables, right? It is a true market enterprise value for the business that's been built for the firm. And so an ESOP pays fair market value, which is what a financial buyer would be willing to pay. And so the valuations for ESOPs really trail what private equity is paying for these accounting firms. And so now valuations aren't, mid-single digits, they're double digits, right? And so it's really reset the expectations of where things are. With interest rates coming down, certainly it makes financing ESOPs easier. It'll make financing private equity transactions easier in the accounting space.
Well, let's look ahead to 2026, as much as we can get a crystal ball out in these situations.
Yeah.
We try and give our viewers, listeners, practical considerations to take stuff away. And you speak so eloquently on these topics here. Where do you see the biggest opportunity for private company owners or their advisors in the next 12 months, Michael?
Yeah, I think the fact that if interest rates continue ticking down, it's going to be looking at financing. So all across the age spectrum, whether it's a dividend recap for younger shareholders that need some liquidity outside the business, whether it's going to be M&A markets becoming much more active in the middle market this year because financing of buyouts comes down, or it's going to be, you know, continued interest in ESOPs because the financing costs come down. I think interest rates are going to be the biggest driver this year.
Mm. If you were to predict one big shift in how deals are structured or financed over the next couple of years, what might that be?
Yeah. I even in the private equity game, there's been increasingly more employee ownership angles. So it's not an ESOP, but there are, you know, KKR and others that are offering, you know, 5%, 10% equity to broad-based employees alongside the private equity buyout. I think that adoption model is going to continue to grow. It's not only good from a PR standpoint, but it's really good for the employees and staff. Once you have these exits from private equity firm to public markets or PE firm to PE firm.
What do you love most about what you do, Michael? You seem very passionate about this.
Yeah. Honestly, especially in contrast to what I was doing in private equity previously, is creating, using all of this institutional knowledge about what private equity firms know, what investment bankers know, but bringing it down to the middle market private business owner and creating solutions for them that otherwise would not have been there. I mean, honestly, that's all we're doing. We do it with an ESOP because an ESOP is a highly powerful tax tool. But in reality, we could be doing it with anything. And it's really just being a conduit of that information, strategies, and analysis alongside our clients' trusted advisors, wealth managers, accountants, attorneys, bankers. You know, that's what I absolutely love doing.
Yeah. What excites you most about what's coming up for you and CSG Partners this year, Michael?
Look, last year was a very good year. This year, our pipeline is stronger than it's ever been. I think there's a lot of very, very smart businesses going into ESOP transactions this year. And so honestly, we're just excited to get started and get the ball rolling, having closed on 2025 just a couple of weeks ago.
And if accounting professionals listening are intrigued by what you're saying and want a conversation, how open are you to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Always open to, you know, brief introductory conversation, answering questions about ESOPs, filling in gaps of knowledge. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Well, final question, Michael, what can CPAs do today to set their clients up for a successful exit?
Books and records, upgrading assurance work. So one of the first things we always recommend is moving from compilation to review, review to audit. So upgrading assurance work is number one. Number two, estate planning. So getting an estate planning attorney involved, making sure that equity where it can be is outside of the estate. And then three, going back to my recommendation before, making sure that they're listing their priorities.
Well, Michael Brennan of CSG Partners, thank you so much for your passion and your insights today. It's been a joy to hear all about ESOPs and how they are such a game changer in the accounting world. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
You've been listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast with me, Rob Brown, available on YouTube and all of your podcast channels. Thank you for tuning in and sharing the show. We'll see you next time.